Hi, I'm Taryn Winterbrill, host of Bestseller TV on C-Suite Radio. On this show, I sit down with leading business authors to find out what makes their books stand out from the crowd. With thousands of new business books and titles being published each year, we try to make it just a little bit easier for you to decide which ones are worth the read. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is part of the C-Suite Radio Network, turning the volume up on business.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Bestseller TV. I'm Taryn Winterbrill. We're here with Robert Pizzini. He is the author of Elevate Your Leadership, How to Develop, Maintain, and Advance Lifelong Leadership. Bob, it's wonderful to have you with us.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here in Dallas with you.
Likewise. Congratulations on your first book.
Oh, thank you.
I have to say, it's a great read, and it really sticks out. A quote that I loved right off the bat as I was digging into it, you said, "You wrote this book with your heart as much as with your head." And I love that. It just kind of warms your soul. Tell us what you mean by that.
Sure. So throughout my entire professional life, I had experiences like most people do, and some experiences are very positive and you want to repeat those, and some are very negative and you never want to visit those again. And the very positive ones over time become very personal, and you care with your heart. You think with your head, you care with your heart, or you feel with your heart. So I wanted to take those very heartfelt thoughts that I had that were developing over the course of my entire professional life and eventually share those with others.
Yeah, and it definitely comes through in the book. You can feel the passion and the heart coming through, because sometimes you read books and it's just literature, right? It's just a lot of information, a lot of data, but yours sticks out. And speaking of sticking out, another thing I read as I was digging in, a very prominent dean of a business school said that there are tons of leadership books out on the market. There are so many. I mean, you Google leadership books, there's a plethora. But she said, this is very specific, you have something new to offer, and it's rare that you hear that. So put that into your own words. What makes yours different?
I've read so many leadership books, and I've participated in so many leadership events. You know, a lot of those are academic drills, and leadership is not academic in my experience. Leadership is action, and it's activity, and it's thought, and it's caring, and it's understanding the human condition.
Yeah.
And those are all the things that, once again, that I experienced that just had so much meaning for me. And those are the things that I thought were the most important aspects of leadership. And in my leadership journey,
yeah,
those are the things I think that enabled success along the way.
Sure. And let's talk about that journey and use the word experience, because yours is absolutely unique. Tell everybody a little bit about your background. You have a military background, and that kind of informed the genesis of the book.
Oh, there's no question about it. The book is founded in my 26-year Navy Special Operations career. So I grew up watching the undersea world of Jacques Cousteau, like many people my age, and I was enamored with all things underwater and the realm of the ocean. And I became a scuba diver at a young age, and that led to awareness of Navy diving and what a Navy diver is. And so when I graduated high school, I just wanted to be a Navy diver.
Wow.
And Navy diving led to another career field in the Navy called Navy EOD, or Explosive Ordnance Disposal. So cut the red wire, cut the blue wire.
Wow.
So a career.
No pressure.
So and that's part of actually the beauty. There could be tremendous pressure, and in that career, you have to learn how to be calm under pressure.
Sure.
Meaning you have to think and you have to act and you have to do these things very quickly and very accurately, very precisely. You know, the penalty for mishandling or otherwise misdiagnosing an explosive is it's not a good outcome.
What is the penalty there?
Yeah.
Right, in your experience?
So, yeah, it's not a good outcome. So that career brought discipline to me. It brought a calm, but it also brought a sense of urgency.
Sure.
And a sense of responsibility and a sense of team and all these things that go into that that type of a career. U.S. Navy Special Operations is just the best career field I could think of. We travel the world. I've been to some wonderful places in the world. I've been to some terrible places in the world. Mm-hmm. But the perspective that you get on the human condition is very informative and helps me understand who I am, and it helps me communicate and identify with others.
Amazing. I just want to reiterate, you said 26 years you spent in
yes.
the Navy? Wow,
yeah.
That's incredible. So I'm always curious, this is your first book. Tell us about the genesis. You know, you've had all these unique life experiences. What makes you say to yourself, self, I want to put this on paper and sort of show the parallel between maybe executive leadership and military leadership, rather?
Sure. So my journey after the military was to go into the private sector and establish my own business. And in the process of creating the business plan, of finding funding, of briefing investors, and then building the facility, and then operating the facility. When I took on the book, I was operating my business for 9 years. Mm-hmm. I just learned so much, both in the private sector and then from my military career. And the lessons in leadership overlapped in a lot of cases, and they absolutely did not in a lot of cases. And I learned a lot of those lessons, you know, the hard way, as people say. And so I just thought that there was a really good message to share with people on what does overlap and what works well and what doesn't. And more importantly, I was maturing as a businessman. My leadership team, I have 40 people in my company, my leadership team, they've all been with me since the beginning for 10 years now.
Amazing.
And so we were maturing as a group or as a team of people who are absolute professionals, but also people who care about each other, who look out for each other, people who, when you put people first, success will follow. If you don't put people first, you're doomed for failure at some point. And there's lesson after lesson and story after story of these failures. And so putting people first was really, really one of the important things. But the other thing that happened in writing the book was, as a veteran and as somebody who has TBI, traumatic brain injury, I was going through some treatment programs. And in these treatment programs, the aspects of health and wellness that I learned, I felt and I thought that these are things I should have learned in fifth grade. These are things everybody should have learned in fifth grade. These are the basic scientific principles of health and wellness, physical health, mental wellness, and the two of those things thrive off of each other. And so as I was learning this and as I was applying this, and I was sharing this information with my leadership team, I saw those seeds begin to sprout, you know, and I saw people responding in a very positive way, and I just wanted to share the message.
Right. You break leadership up into two parts, Bob. You talk about the art of leadership, and you kind of equate it to an artist's palette, right? There's so many styles of leadership. It's not one size fits all, rather. But I want to pick up on what you just said, the science of leadership. That's part two, which I thought was so interesting. When you think about leadership, I think, I don't necessarily think about hydration or brain function, even though we probably should be, but you kind of highlight these really important mechanisms and you say to yourself, well, kind of duh, that does make a lot of sense. So tell us about that dichotomy.
Sure. So again, one of the reasons for writing the book, you know, we hear about the art and science of leadership all the time, and there's books written on it, and there's books who carry that title, and there's university courses, the art and science of leadership. But what does it really mean?
Yeah.
And it's, for me, it's not all the university level stuff. So the art simply is the ability to navigate through all these different leadership styles and power types and scenarios that are presented to you, and you have to pick up on whatever style or power type or tool is at your disposal given that situation. Just like being a Navy EOD tech, whatever that explosive is, we have to select the right tools and apply them at the right time to get the desired result. So that's the art. The science, for me, is a radical shift from anything anybody's ever read about or learned about in terms of the science of leadership. Because for me, the science is this. It's the science of leadership is physiological. If we're not taking care of this machine on a daily basis in the ways that I very specifically discuss in the book, then we're performing, we're underperforming. We might be performing at 50% capacity or 75% capacity or 20% capacity, depending on your health and wellness on any given day.
Yeah, I love what you just said, leadership is physiological. One of the stats you mentioned in the book, you say that 42% of executives get 6 hours of sleep or less. Is that right?
Yeah, it's wow. amazing. And when I have my seminars and when I keynote and when we have our courses that we do at iFly Virginia Beach, which is where a lot of this originated, and I interact with people, it's amazing how executives thrive on less than 8 hours of sleep. And depending on what book you read, most science agrees that the average adult should get between 6 and 9 hours of sleep every 24 hours.
Right.
And that's the rest and recharge that that is programmed into our physiology. And if we fight that like Ronald Reagan did and like Margaret Thatcher did, mm-hmm. you know, these are just sleep deprivation is something that can accelerate or lead to Alzheimer's or dementia or some other mental type of disorders.
C-Suite Radio.
What do you think the biggest mistake is that leaders are making from a physiological standpoint? Is it sleep or is it something else?
Well, I think it's everything. So there's six key components that I talk about in the book: rest, hydration, nutrition, exercise, brain and heart health, and lifelong learning. And I express those six things as a Venn, meaning they all touch each other. Meaning that if one of them is impacted negatively, for example, if I'm not well hydrated, then my rest won't be as well, my brain and heart communication will not be as efficient, my exercise will not be as efficient. So if one of those six things is negatively impacted, all the others are negatively impacted.
Sure. Yeah.
But the opposite is true. So the more I tend to my rest and my hydration and my nutrition, the more my brain and heart thrive and can communicate. And as a leader, right, because this is about leadership at the end of the day, the better decisions I can make. And just a quick example,
yeah.
Leaders who are sleep deprived have a tendency to make poor decisions. Those decisions can be very damaging. These decisions could be immoral, unethical, or illegal. Now, I'm not saying that just because somebody got a bad night's sleep, they came in and
right.
made a poor decision, but...
Tell that to the judge.
Yeah. but these things, they all follow each other, either positively or negatively. An exercise coach who I interviewed, he works mainly with executives, and he says that when he asks executives to prioritize their day, exercise and self-care usually comes in around number 5 or number 6, which
right.
means they probably never even get to it.
Exactly.
So if you have to take care of yourself and you have to take care of this machine and the mind-heart connection, and the more attention you pay to that, the better you can serve others. Because as a leader, it's your job to serve others. And if you're not taking care of this machine physiologically, you are negatively impacting your ability to serve others. It's that simple.
Yeah. I wonder, have you seen anyone in real time kind of adopt these new strategies that you talk about in the book, going from you know, getting 6 hours of sleep a night to then all of a sudden really being able to perform and not make hasty decisions?
Sure. So I get feedback all the time, and I'll give two examples. One is from a gentleman who just left a review on Amazon. It was a wonderful review. He said, you know, Bob, although I've never met you, here's how you've positively impacted my life, both at work and at home.
Yeah.
Because again, the better we take care of ourselves, the better we can take care of others, and that's at home and at work, and it's really that simple. So great positive impact there. In this case, it was about being more in the moment and more conscious for his family. You know, I feel like I'm there for them when I should be more than previously.
Yeah, wonderful.
There was a young woman who bought my book about maybe 9 months or so ago, and I watched her go through a transformation, not just in weight loss. She's a business owner. She went through this incredible transformation,
yeah.
but in energy and mental clarity, and her confidence as a leader has grown significantly, and it's just wonderful to see people
love that
grow in that capacity.
That's got to feel great, just because I'm just wondering, of all the executives out there, just to play devil's advocate, who run successful businesses, Bob, who say, we're doing just fine, I'm not exercising, I'm not getting a lot of sleep, I don't need to, right? But what you said, it's the long-term effect, right? It's short-term, sure, it might be working, but down the road.
Yeah, that's right. Check back with that executive in 5 years
right.
or 10 years, because what we're developing, and it's, you know, the subtitle of the book, is lifelong leadership.
Right.
And the ability to be energetic, to be physically energetic and mentally focused throughout the whole day,
yeah.
throughout the whole week, throughout the whole month, throughout the whole year, throughout your entire professional life, however long you decide you want that to be.
Yeah.
As opposed to, it's 2 p.m, I can barely keep my eyes open, I know I've got to go to my son's soccer game at 6:00, how am I going to make that happen?
Right.
You know, it's this constant feeling of being behind. Well, if you pay attention to the science of leadership as I describe it, you're on top of it mentally and physically and emotionally, by the way.
Yeah, I would love to see you host a game show where you put executives in a boot camp that need improvement and you put them through your military type skills and training. I would love to see how they come out on the back end. So just an idea.
Yeah,
so
sure.
Feel free
love
to
that.
Take it. You say, Bob, you say leadership is a perishable skill. What do you mean by that?
So that's really quite simple as well. Anything that we don't rehearse regularly, a skill, we lose.
Right.
A musician has got to practice, has got to rehearse. An athlete trains and trains and trains. And being a leader is no different. There are skills and tools that we use in leadership.
Yeah.
And if you don't revisit those skills and keep everything in your conscious mind, so when that situation presents itself, you know what to do, rather than I have no idea what to do, or you do the wrong thing, you overreact or you underreact.
Right.
If you practice the art of leadership on a regular basis, then you'll be prepared for that situation. If you don't, what you knew a week ago or a month ago is gone, or you're too physically tired, or your brain is too physically tired to go back in the library and find the solution to that particular situation,
right,
because you haven't paid attention to rest, hydration, nutrition, etc. So leadership is a perishable skill.
Mm-hmm.
Use it or lose it.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Love it. Use it or lose it. So it's like a muscle that can atrophy.
Absolutely.
That's kind of how I write it.
C-Suite Radio.
I want to ask you, because since you say it's a skill, this is something, it's like a plant, it needs to be nourished. Do you believe, Bob, that leaders are born, that people are born leaders? I'm sure people can learn skills to become leaders, but do you truly believe that there are some that are just right out of the gate, this is what I'm meant to do, and kind of everything you teach, they kind of have a natural instinct for?
Sure. So I think that some people have it in their DNA,
right,
to be more inclined towards leadership. Doesn't mean they're going to be a good leader or they are a good leader. And then some people aren't born with that gene, but they develop the skill set over time, because at the end of the day, it is a skill set.
Yeah.
And so you could be born with conditions, you could have predispositions to be a good leader, but if you don't exercise that, it doesn't matter. Some people are born with the physicality to be great athletes.
Yeah.
But if they don't practice, train, they never achieve the height of whatever their sport is.
Sure.
And so leadership is a trained skill. It's learned, it's trained, it's coached, it's mentored, and it's repeated time and time again.
Yeah.
Things that are important are worth revisiting on a regular basis.
Right. So I love that it's kind of, you think, oh, he's a leader. No, this is something you work at. It's something that you really have to, like I say, I always say watering a plant. So really anybody can be a leader. It's a matter of if you want to put the work in. If you want that position, if you want that pedestal. When I was looking at the first part, the art of leadership, Bob, and you talk about the personal leadership profile and choosing your particular leadership style, what struck me is, okay, once I pick my style, do styles evolve? Once I pick my style, will that change over time, or will I be the same leader forever?
So there will be evolution, but there will also be these anchoring points. So
okay,
you will be the same in many ways, and that stability, you being the same, that's very important to people around you. They want to have the same Taryn every time they come and see you in the work setting.
Right.
They don't want to think to themselves, oh, stay away from her today, you know, she's having a bad day.
Yeah.
Or, hey, today's a good day, today's the day we ask for a raise or whatever. So you want to be dependable and stable. So there's a sameness there. People get the same Taryn,
yeah,
every single day.
So there's a foundation of
there's
leadership.
There's a foundation.
Okay.
And at the same time, you as a leader should be evolving and changing and growing every single day. You're expanding the tools of leadership that are available to you on a daily basis. And that's the lifelong aspect of leadership that I talk about. And again, the perishability. You know, there's sayings out there, if you're not growing, you're dying.
And
I would say that life, generally speaking, is an evolution, regardless of what it is you do. But if you're in the leadership space, you need to be growing. To be effective and to last as long as you'd like to last.
So final thought, Bob, once I have that foundation, as I'm growing and maybe changing jobs, but still, you know, practicing as a leader, can I actually change my style? Because as you see in the book, there's so many to choose from, although that foundation is remaining the same.
Sure. So you can change your style, and you should, as different situations present themselves. However, you should also know who you are and what it is you're comfortable with. So my three primary styles are coach, visionary, and participative. Participative meaning I want to hear from everybody. Coach meaning you have the skill, I'm just going to show you how to use it. And visionary, which every leader should be, meaning I'm setting the cardinal direction of the organization and I want to make sure everybody knows it. And I'm going to repeat it and discuss it frequently. However, I could evolve in other areas as necessary, depending on people around me. People are different. And you have to apply different leadership styles for different people. And I'll just give you one example. Directive is a leadership style. You go here, do this, you do that. Most appropriate in police, fire, EMS, and of course, military, which has been my experience. But it's not really appropriate in the average everyday workplace setting. So I don't like to be directive, but I will if I have to. If the situation presents itself, I'll go there. Because I know it's there, I know it's available, and I know what it looks like when it when the situation requires me to do that. So, so you can change and you can evolve, but you also want to have that foundation.
There's so much to get to. You know, I don't want to give too much away, but final question, since this is a book about elevating your leadership, just curious, when you were younger, who were the leaders you looked up to? Or perhaps there's one currently.
So, you know, I love that question because the seeds of our leadership were planted when we were children, actually. Our parents, our teachers, our coaches, these are the people who were in charge of us. These are the people who led us. And ultimately, we adapt those leadership styles early in life. Most of us don't recognize that, but we just kind of naturally adapt that. So I did have hockey coaches in particular that I looked up to. And ultimately, early in my military career, there were people who, you know, there's, Billy, who hopefully will see this one day, who's a good friend of mine, but he's, I always wanted to be like him. His leadership was solid. It made sense. He communicated well with people. If he had to be directive, he would be. But so that's somebody I always wanted to be like. And even today, there's certainly people out there. So, you know, I talk about hockey in the book because I coach high school hockey, and you know, that's a leadership role, but I'm developing young leaders. And so there's a lot of people in the profession of hockey, both NHL and kind of more at my local level that I relate to for a variety of reasons. Good men, good women, good people who are trying to really positively influence our youth.
Well, I love what you just said, Bob, because it sounds like you're constantly elevating your leadership, which is what we all need to be doing. It's been terrific. The book's excellent. We could talk all day, but I heard a little sneak peek that there might be another book coming after this.
So a lot of people, and in the reviews, I get asked that all the time, and I do have a draft for my next book called Elevate Your Team. I talk a lot about teamwork and Elevate Your Leadership, so much so that Elevate Your Team is a subject unto itself, and so I really look forward to getting to work on that.
Can't wait. We hope you'll come back. And if you'd like more information on the book, just check out our website. It's csuitebookclub.com. That's c-suitebookclub.com. I'm Taryn Winterbrill. Thank you for watching. We'll see you next time right here on Bestseller TV.
Like what you just heard, visit c-suiteradio.com. C-Suite Radio, turning the volume up on business. This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.